And one of the boys, the oldest boy, was very bright, but he was a little bit of a problem child. So this was very common. They always had problem children. They send them away. They sent parents, I know why they send them away to Israel. And he wound up at that time Palestine. And the other ones, the two other boys and the girls perished during the Holocaust, and the boys are both in Israel. One is a chemist, and one actually was a professional soldier in the Israeli, and an officer in the Israeli army. The one who was the problem child wound up in Rommel's army, not fighting Rommel, and then came back, and he wound up, I don't know how, came to the United States. Just about a year ago he passed away. He lived in Cleveland.
Whose kids were these? They,
my daughter Bertha's kids.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, the third sister, she lived in Ungvar and Etush. She had three children. Of those, now Ungvar has the same thing, but Ungvar was not a Hasidic city. The Jewish population, I mean the population of the city of Ungvar was 30,000, and there was about, I would say, about 35 or something percent of them were Jews. Let me retrack back to Munkács. Munkács was a city in the same thing, about 30,000, but there's the majority of them were Jews.
Mm.
That's a very, what's in their people, a lot of people don't know about that. And they had three children, as I point out, two boys and one girl. The youngest boy perished through the Holocaust, and the other two are in Israel. The boy and the sister and brother, they're both in Israel. Mm-hmm. One was an electrical, the boy was an electrical engineer,
mm-hmm.
and he worked for the, what is it, the Hebrew electrical company, I don't know, it doesn't make it, I can think of it anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And she started medical school in Prague,
mm-hmm.
then she never finished, she came away with the United States, I mean to Israel, and she worked all her life until the retirement in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Now the fourth one was my brother Lipót. He lived again in Ungvar. He had two children, both were young and both perished in the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Both. And then the fifth one was my sister Shari, who lived in Pittsburgh, and to her I'll come back more later on, how I wound up here and everything. The next one was my brother Isidore. He was the one, as a child, afflicted by polio. He was very unusual man, intelligent, self-taught, knew more than a lot of people, tremendous chess player, a lot of qualities. He had a deformed arm and leg, and he perished, of course, in the Holocaust. Then came my other sister, Rosie, and she just got married in 1940, and during the Holocaust period, like the rest of the Jews from Hungary were taken, the men were taken to a labor camp, her husband was taken to labor camp, she came back with her child, they lived in Munkács, she came back with her child and stayed with us, and then I'll come back to her too. And the other two brothers are right here, Alex and Eugene live here in Pittsburgh. Okay? After...
What year was that?
What?
To Pittsburgh.
To Pittsburgh in 19... I thought I'd come back to
yeah.
that. All right, okay, I'll come back to that because I already had all the whole story after that. And this is about basically the background of my family. My father and my mother, they were still... my father was in 1944, 74. My mother was 68. And during... my father was still in pretty good health, so was my mother. Of course, they all perished again during the Holocaust. I come from a family, their family was a large, they all had large families. My father had, maybe I should stop for a minute and I'll get my, I have a, let's say, my family. I had a lot of uncles, a lot of nans, many, quite a few, I'll say quite a few. Some of them lived close by, some lived a little bit further away. Some I was, we were close, but some I didn't even know some of my. Some I met one cousin here in the United States. I never knew that he was my cousin. He came over to after the war and I met him. The thing was, because my nephews and nieces, some of them are my contemporaries. So there was much more that I had. This was my closest family. And then I had some cousins who lived close by. These were the ones too I had. But there's some cousins who lived further away. I had no contact, very little contact. But some kind of, if it was some family affair or something, some of them sometimes came to it. Let me go back to the summer vacation time. Always my mother was one of those who loved to have her grandchildren. The grandchildren used to come always in summer, spend the summer with us. And they enjoyed it. Actually, I have learned from them a lot of things that I did not observe and I did not see what they felt and how much, what effect it had on them, that the time they spent with their grandparents. They saw in their grandparents certain things that I didn't see in my parents. It's very, any time we get together in Israel with these nephews and nieces and they tell me stories about my grandparents. And my parents and their grandparents. And I always remember an interesting story with one of my nephews, my oldest brother's kids. They used to come in summertime. And when they were in our place, they were the two brothers. And one of them was quite religious and the other one wasn't. And my mother used to tell them in the morning, prepare them before they had breakfast, that they should have, they should pray, should daven. And the older one, without any hesitation right away, did it. The younger one told my mother one day, says, no, she tells him, why don't you? He says, I can't. He says, why not? I have no strength, I'm too hungry, I have to eat first and then I'll do the prayer. And my mother went to give him to eat. He says, you have an answer like that, I have to give you something to eat first. And there are so many, life, it's difficult to remember all these details because they were, now the people, the non-Jewish people over there, I did not encounter anti-Semitism with them. They were people, hard-working people. None, the Jews were not rich, they were poor, and they were poorer, and they just got along. We always said they came, all the work in the fields and all that was always hired labor. There were the Christians who were there who were laborers. And I never had any difficulty, we never had any difficulties with any of those people. And I'll come back to that later. I'll tell you some stories.
You were rich compared to them.
No, yes, compared to rich to them. Yes, because I'll tell you what. Yes. I'll tell you another story. I was somebody who left the village where I came from and came to the United States because he had two brothers and wound up in Cleveland. And after the war, when I came over here already, and there was a wedding, and one day this man came to this wedding. I know he was related to somebody here in Pittsburgh, and the wedding was in the Shara Torah. And he was talking to people, and he said, you know who they are? They were very rich. And myself, to him, we were rich.
Very rich.
And because he was a son of a widow whose husband was killed during World War I. And you know, she was a very poor widow, and he was very poor. To him, we were rich. But I basically were not rich, but you know, it depends always in the
family.
Yes, that's it.
I'll be older.
For me, right, I'll be older. No, sometimes other people see much better than you see yourself, and
that's all. That's right.
Because somebody told me once, you want to know what's going on in your house, because you know, your houses were very close to each other. You go to your neighbor, you'll find out what's going on. So this is on the same idea.
It's a different view.
No, yeah, it's right. And the same thing with my nephews and nieces. Mm-hmm. They have a different view than I have.
Mm-hmm.
After the Hungarians moved in, what can I go with it? Let me go back just a little bit about the schooling.
Year?
In the 1938, I still was there, but that time I didn't, even because in October already the Czechs, either after Munich Pact, I finished schooling. After mm-hmm. I came back and I wanted to go back. I could have gone back to Hungarian schools, but I was not proficient enough, and I somehow was depressed that time. It was a tremendous shock to me, as I pointed out, because I was brought up in a different culture. So I got myself a job. A brother-in-law of mine, who was in lumber business, then in business with somebody else, who was a converted Jew. And as a converted Jew in Hungary, you could own property. I mean, you could be in business. And so he was the silent partner, and then I worked for him for a couple of years, and I went to different little towns where they had their lumber, what do you call it? They bought forests, and then they cut down the trees, and most of the thing was usually for, what do you call that, you know, for railroad,
tie.
Yeah, right, that's what it is. And that was their job. I don't know where to go, because I'm afraid I'm jumping too far ahead. I just didn't want to jump too far ahead, because I just don't want to, because it's still in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wound up by working in those smaller communities everywhere, and I always stayed with some Jewish families, and in the same time didn't know really what to expect or what not to expect. But by 1941 I reached military age, and that time the Jews were still in the army, in the Hungarian army. My older brother Eugene was in the Hungarian army. He was taken into the army in 1939, and he was in the Hungarian army yet in 1941, in the beginning of 1941. As I went for my physical, of course I passed it without any problems. And in October 1st, 1941, I got my papers for October 1st and wound up in a city so-called Kosha in Hungarian. And that's in Slovakia. That was Hungary that time, now it's in Slovakia. Mm-hmm. And it's called Košice. K-O-S-I-C-E, in Hungarian was K-A-S-S-A. And when we arrived there and wound up in a big barracks, it used to be a lumber, saw factory.
Sawmill,
right. And there they were emptying that, and they were set up there. Barracks there for us, we had there. And we played soldiers there. We two wore Hungarian uniforms. They, of course, didn't give us guns.
Were you in a Jewish contingent or
male? All Jewish contingent. And we got 6 weeks of basic training without guns. We were completely under Hungarian military rule. We had a guard in the front of the gate there. You had to stand guard every second or third day or fourth day, depends how often you want there. Every 2 hours they change and you're playing soldiers. And after eight weeks or something like that, after we have graduated, they took us out from there, and then they started out. They sent us to different camps, so-called labor camps. And I wound up in a place called Hust, C-H-U-S-T. And there, we were working all kinds of labor. Part of us were working that time with the Hungarian army, the so-called engineers. We were schlepping the pontoons. We were doing all the hard work, and some of us were working on the roads. different kinds of jobs we were doing there. But in the same time, on Sundays we had they let us out, we could go visit people. If we had some money, we could supplement our supplies or our food, but the food wasn't too bad. None of these things. Work was hard, but sometimes not as, depends, it always where you wound up. Everything under the supervision of Hungarian army. We stayed there actually until spring 1942, and we were, all of us were from different parts of Hungary. A lot of them came from Ruthenia, but a lot of them from so-called Hungary also. Most of them were born 1917, 18, 19, and 20. And by spring 1942, those who were born in 17, 18, 19 were taken out and sent another place. All of us who were born in 1920, they were always sent to Erdély. They were sent to Romania. That's actually Transylvania.
Yeah, what's
the name of the, where were you sent?
To Transylvania.
Yes, you said Erdély.
Erdély. That's because in Hungarian, Transylvania is called Erdély.
Yeah, he said, right.
We were sent there, and because Romania, but that time, Romania too was occupied, part of Romania is Transylvania, but it was occupied by Hungary. And as we arrived there, again, different, we wound up in a place called Tosnád, and I don't know what the Romanian name is for this, the Hungarian name is T-A-S-N-A-D, that's all I remember about it. And from there, by May, we were sent
in 42,
and we were sent, all of us, we were sent to a place called Lutosa, L-U-T-A-S-Z-A, not far from Maramoros Sziget, and that is Sziget, from where Elie Wiesel comes, not far from there. We were sent to a place high up in the mountains. It was a place where the Romanians used to have their ski troops used to train. Now the Hungarians, they took over and they set up there, they had their barracks and they were training to train the Hungarian ski troops. We arrived in May, and there was still snow there. It was a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
No way to come there. Only thing you had to go is you could walk up there. There were no tracks or anything. No cars could come up there. And when we arrived there, I still remember there was some snow. And then you got up in the morning, you were a lot of times, the clouds were below you. You were above the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the nicest places. And there we were. And there our job was, first of all, to prepare for them all kinds of wood to cut up for the Hungarian army, to repair the barracks. We were isolated, far away, nobody saw us. We had a good commander, a nice person, and I think that was the nicest time of my labor camp that I ever was. From all the camps that I've been, we used to have there very talented kids, and there were some of them musicians, actors, everything. Every Sunday, Saturday, used to put up shows. We used to live a real nice life. Food, there was a little bit of a problem. We didn't have much of potatoes or anything like that because all the food that was consumed there had to be carried out. So we ate a tremendous amount of beans, lentils and stuff like that, but it didn't matter. But meat we had, and bread we had, and it was a place that we became very close-knit family, and everybody else each used to help each other. And the commander used to be the person who used to give furloughs, especially there were some people who knew him from home. He's got a lot of furloughs to come home, even, but everybody else...
Commander was Hungarian.
Yes,
Army.
Everything was Hungarian. There was nobody else. He used to get a furlough too, to cover up the corruption. So the poorer people used to get furloughs too. We used to get home for about 3 or 4 days, or sometimes 5 days, and then you used to bring back some supplies. And I remember when we were up there, Monday coming back, and I was walking up, and there is another labor camp not far away from there, and they were working very hard. And I ran into my brother Alex, and I was carrying a couple of coffee cakes, so I gave him one of the coffee cakes. And he was, to him it was a big thing then, because they had a hard time, an awful, awful commander. It always depended who was in charge of the camp. I think it was about the nicest place that I ever been in camp, labor camp. While I was in Tashnat, again, I'll go back to the place before I went there. No, it's all right. And then, by September, the wind already, snow started to come down, and they brought us back. And they brought us back to Tashnat, and we came there, and we stayed there until the 1943. And I remember we used to, again, in the surrounding, around Tashnat, there were small Jewish communities. Again, Jews living like in almost in Krotinia. A lot of them were farmers. And they were very nice people who used to take us in, feed us. They have a lot of nice girls there. We had a nice time there. Actually, sometimes I wonder who was better off, we or the non-Jews. Because the non-Jews were on the Russian front, and they were much harder time than we had. Of course, it always depends, again, which labor camp you were. I was so happy I was in camps that they were tolerable, and they were quite nice people there. I met their wonderful, wonderful friends, but I'll come back to them, how I lost all these things. And this was partially of the life of labor camp, that you got up in the morning, you got your breakfast, and then you went out to work, and you came home in the evening, there was just some bread and stuff like that for lunch, but in the evening, a full course dinner, plenty to eat. You're young, you could sometimes eat more, but basically, nobody starved there. Nobody starved there. The cooks were all Jewish, the same thing as we were, all of them. And if you had some friends and you knew some friends, they were always helpful to each other.
Was I any Solona?
Just beef and stuff like that. But it didn't matter to us. I remember in 1940, While we were there at camp and at Lutasa, Yom Kippur came, and Yom Kippur was on Shabbat, on Saturday, so we didn't have to go to work, and we observed the Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. And I went to shul, we had some books, not many, and there were about two or three non-Jews. They were so-called, in Hungary there was a cult or a religion, so-called Szombatista. They called the observer of the Sabbath, They were very religious. They were more religious than anybody else. They did not deviate. They observed it so closely, everything like that. This was a Hungarian, what's the name? And they went to shul with us on Yom Kippur too. And we, of course, we didn't eat anything, and the dinners was given out earlier. And we, those who fasted, lost our dinner. We didn't eat, and then the evening we came, we didn't get dinner either. But I knew somebody in the kitchen there. I got some food, I remember. But so we wondered, who is better off, those who didn't fast or those who fasted? Those who didn't fast got the reward, and those who fasted didn't get the meal. But none of us starved for that. And we had there. I remember especially, I had a very interesting fellow, I cannot think of his name. He came from one of the Hungarian smaller towns, Kisvárda, or somewhere like that. He looked like a real Hungarian, with a pair of the mustache, and everything like that. This fellow used to get up every morning, But 15 minutes early, he set this time, and he used to put on every morning film. And but because you could have that time, you could have had everything. I had film with me too, but I did not put on his office either. He, every morning he got up, he would never have said that even he is Jewish, you know. You cannot. And then the next experience that I had in that labor camp and when we were in Lutosa was an interesting event. Happened one day, about four young men in military still uniform walked in there. We didn't know what it is. We found out later they were all children of converts. And they were taken off in the Hungarian, until that period they still the Hungarian army, the converts they still remained in the army. They were taken out and they were brought into camp. They had to change after that, put in a civilian clothes too. And they wound up, two of them wound up in the same barrack that I was. What I remember about them is nights, by 9 o'clock, the lights went off, and they used to go off the bed, kneel down and pray. Mm-hmm. And to them, I felt sorry for them. At least I knew who I am, but these people were lost souls. They didn't know. How did I wind up? I didn't know their Jewish friends, and suddenly brought up as Christians. Here they find themselves among the Jews. I don't know what happened to them, because I'll come back on that. Yes.
None survived.
Well, probably not. But the thing is, you know, I felt sorry for these guys. I did. Because, I mean, these were innocent children, innocent young boys, 19, 20, something like that, and suddenly they find themselves mingled like that. And, you know, you really realize that I almost can't see them yet, you know, things like that, how it was. And this was the camp life. Let me stress it, when in Hungary, there were different camps, two labor camps. We were the fortunate ones that we wound up in these camps. A lot of them wound up on the Russian front. And those who wound up on the Russian front, that I'll come back to it. What happened to them? A lot of them died. They were the ones who were...
Your biography.
What?
That's not your story.
No. But they were, I have connections with it, because Eugene was one of them. See, I have a brother who had that. You see, a lot of them wound up, they wore Hungarian uniforms, and they wound up on the Russian front to assist the Hungarian army. And some of them were killed like with the soldiers, and then some of them wound up were captured by the Russians. But I'll come back to that after that, what happened to some of them. The labor camp, as I pointed out, we were there and moved from one place to another place. In 1943, we were moved from Transylvania, and we were moved to the city of Szeged. That's deep in Hungary, not far, quite far, past Budapest, closer to the Danube River place. And as we arrived there, they told us that you're getting now a furlough, and you're going home, and get yourself some extra clothes, because we're going somewhere else, without knowing where, what. We came home.
How far were you from your home?
Oh, that's a good distance. Good distance. Mm-hmm. Good distance. That's just a really good. It's about by train, probably a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you traveled by train?
By train, only train.
Only train.
And as we came home, I saw my family, my everybody like that, and got some belongings that I needed, stayed there a few days, and I returned. When we returned to to Szeged, then they told us that we are going somewhere. Like pointed out, and after the third or fourth day, to line up, and we went to the Danube River, and then we arrived to the Danube River. There was a boat waiting for us. We got down on the boat. We were started to sail, squeezed in, but who cares? It was a nice day, and we were traveling, and it didn't take too long. We suddenly saw Belgrade from the river, from Danube, and we kept on going. We wound up at a place called Bor, and that is closer to the Bulgarian border. When we arrived there, there were barracks, and we wound up in those barracks, and again, under the guards. Our guards and all these were Hungarians, and we didn't know what to expect. The next morning, lined us up.
How many were there of you, approximately?
About 300-400.
Mm-hmm. Boer, B-O-R?
B-O-R, yeah. And then we were divided. Some of them went. Boer was the place. They had one of the biggest copper mines in Yugoslavia. And some of them went to the copper mines. And some of us went to canalization, widening the river, and all kinds of jobs. And I wound up among those who went on the canalization. And as we went out there, we worked there. And that was 12 hours, day and night. There were night shifts and day shifts. And every second week you changed the shifts. We were under the supervision of the Germans, so-called the Todt organization. Todt organization is the labor organization of the Germans. There were older people who were in charge of them, usually our